Welcome back to the Tell Them You Mean Business podcast. We are so excited to kick off the football season with the voice of the Green Bay Packers, Wayne Larrabee. Wayne has been the play-by-play voice of the Packers since 1999 and is here today to talk about his career, memorable moments calling games, and his predictions for the Packers this season. Also on this episode, listen to a case result reading about our clients who received $220,000 settlement after being involved in a collision with a driver who attempted to make a left-hand turn in front of their vehicle on a state highway. Stay tuned for all this and more here on this episode of Tell Them You Mean Business. So I am super excited to be here with the voice of the Packers and someone I can call my friend, Wayne Larrabee. Wayne, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule and joining the Tell Them You Mean Business podcast today.
Nice to be here.
So summer's coming to an end. The Packers are getting ready to start the season. And before we get into the specifics about the Packers, I just want to talk about you in general. When did you first realize that you wanted to do radio, play-by-play, and do all that kind of stuff?
Probably when I was like a junior in high school or something like that. I thought the easy job would be to become a teacher, and then I started looking at what we were doing to teachers, and I said, no, I don't think I want any part of that. But, you know, I kind of started to gravitate toward – I was playing sports and that type of thing, so I said, you know what? This would be something I'd be interested in. I went to college specifically to get into broadcasting.
Okay. And when you were in high school and were thinking about it, did you do any type broadcasting stuff then? Or was it really just playing sports then and thinking about it after
high school? Yeah, no, not really. I didn't really get on the air until I got to college. And that's when I started to find out, number one, can I do this? Number two, do I like doing this?
When I look at where you started, the first thing that my crack staff told me is that the city in Texas, in 1975, you did some work for KGRO Radio. Is that where it all began?
Well, in Pampa, Texas, it didn't really begin there because I had been working commercially when I was in college on weekends. So, but the Pampa job came up, and I took a semester out of school. I was going to college at Emerson College in Boston, and I was working at a radio station in Great Barrington, about 2 hours away. And I used to go home on weekends and work at that radio station, roll records, read news, that kind of thing on Saturdays and Sundays, and then go back to Boston for school during the week. So in the course of that time, I would pick up this thing called Broadcasting Magazine. It was, you know, like any other business journal except for broadcasting. And I so started applying to these blind ads just to see. And this one thing came through, and it turned out to be Pampa, Texas, which is a town of maybe 75 to 100 miles northwest of Amarillo up in the Texas Panhandle. And it was great. It was Friday Night Lights. They brought me in to do high school football, and they promised my parents they'd send me back for the second semester at school that year. And that's how it worked out. And it was great.
For people that don't understand high school football in Texas, it's wild there. My daughter actually lives in Dallas, and I've been down there and seen some of these stadiums where these high school kids play. It's wild.
Well, Pampa, Texas in 1975 was a town of 25,000 people. So a decent-sized town. But the two tallest structures in the town were the grain silos by the Jimmy Dean Sausage Factory and the press box of the football stadium. And every Friday night, 15,000 people would show up to see the Pampa Harvesters play. And it was religion. It really was. Tuesday, the coach would break down the coaching film publicly for, you know, the booster club and all that. It was really something else.
And from there, did you go to Iowa to do the University of Iowa games?
Well, after I graduated from Emerson in 1977, I got a good break because I had this experience. I got a break in doing Iowa football. They hired me at KSTT in Davenport, Iowa, to come out there and do Iowa football. And this is back in the day. Now, I was fortunate. This is back in the day when they didn't have statewide networks for these big college football teams. Wisconsin had about 3. Iowa had about 12. Every somewhat decent city or any radio station could sign up, pay the rights fee, broadcast the games. There were about 13 originations of Iowa football, and I happened to do one of them, and it was great. It was a great break out of college.
And then from there, it looks like you did some minor league baseball?
Did a little minor league baseball while I was in Davenport, yes.
Okay. And then what was the break that first got you to do NFL?
Well, it was interesting because the Kansas City Chiefs job opened up, and I sent in a tape because the prerequisite was you had to be doing major college football. And so I sent a tape in, and I got a form letter back, and I kept the form letter. And 2 months later, I saw the job was still open. So I had the guy's name and number. I called him, and I said, would you mind if I reapplied? And he said, well, I don't – he said, yeah, I mean, sure, go ahead. But I could tell there was some credulity to his response. He was thinking, why would this guy reapply? So I sent them exactly the same tape I sent before. This is back when you used to send tapes. You have it all on the internet. And I sent them the same tape because it was the best stuff I had. And this time they called back and they said, could you send more? Could you do this and this? It was about a 4 month process. And in the end, it came down to the Chiefs were trying to wrap their arms around how can we hire this 23-year-old guy to do our games when, you know, Ray Scott would fly in, or the radio station wanted a person to take that job, live in the community, be part of the community. The team was okay with having just a weekend warrior come in. The station eventually convinced the team that, yeah, this would be a good idea for the voice of the Chiefs to live in Kansas City and that type of thing. And then it was a matter of could they convince the Chiefs that I was great for the job. But one thing led to another, and it got done eventually.
And what was that like for you, your first day going into Kansas City and understanding at 23 years old that is amazing that you are going to be the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, when I first got to Arrowhead Stadium, on one side of the stadium, they had this little get-together for me. On the other side of the stadium, Ed Podolak, the legendary running back, had his retirement party going on at the same time.
That's funny.
So it was interesting. I mean, it was great that my first broadcast with the Chiefs was a preseason game, and it happened to be at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. That was my first broadcast with the Chiefs. And so it was a preseason game. James Lofton was a rookie. I was a rookie, and Marv Levy was in his first year as head coach of the Chiefs, and they had a really bad team. So, but it was fun. It was just, you know, what a thrill to be in Lambeau Field.
Yeah. If you think about the growing pains of being a 23-year-old broadcaster doing the NFL, what was the hardest adjustment from you going from the college football at Iowa to all of a sudden being, you know, obviously in the NFL and doing the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was just, it was going from one level of football to the other. But I had always been an NFL fan, so it was kind of a dream come true. It was great. But it was kind of tough because, you know, you had games coming up every week, and you didn't have the film, the tape to look at, you know, back in those days. And so it was interesting, but it was a lot of hard work. I do remember that. And also, you know, you're kind of wondering, gosh, am I going to be accepted and all this other stuff? And you're 23 years old and you're thinking, boy, if this doesn't work out, what next? You know, what after that? So it was interesting, but it was great. And it happened to be there at a great time when there were a lot of people about my age or maybe a little bit older that were, you know, involved with media in that market. You know, Rick Goslin, Hall of Fame NFL writer, he has the Rick Goslin special teams ratings are the number one poll of special teams. It's how everybody in the league gauges how good your special teams are. Rush Limbaugh was just getting his career off the ground. You know, there were several other people. John Rooney, the voice of the Cardinals now, baseball team, was there. And all of us were together. Kevin Harlan was just coming out of Kansas. There were a bunch of us, like, right there. Bill Hancock, who now runs the college football playoff. He was with the Big Eight Conference at the time. Steve Hatchell, who runs the College Hall of Fame, was there. And all these people were together at the same time. We're all about the same age. And it was a lot of fun, actually. It really was.
Sounds like it. So you're with Kansas City then through 84, and then the Bears in 85. How did that transition come about? Well, we won't hold that against you because you've been the voice of the Packers for so darn long, but the darn Bears.
Yeah, the Bears. That was really interesting because I was in Kansas City, and I'm doing the Chiefs. And the Chiefs and the radio station are going into this negotiation, you know, for the rights, for the future. So I said, well, I better hedge my bet here. And I knew this job in Chicago was open, so I sent up some information there and that type of thing. And so I was in that process, and the station and the Chiefs, I wasn't sure where they were going to go. And if they went to another station, would I be involved? Probably not. So I was getting another job, basically, to beat the posse out of town. And so I get this job. And then moments later, the Chiefs come to agreement with the radio station, KCMO, for a long-term contract. And so, you know, they look at me and say, well, you know, we'd like you to stay and do these games. And I said, well, I'm going to Chicago. I've got the Bears job. I can't turn that down. And it was great.
So you were there for 13 years, correct? 85
14.
To 14 years, 85 to 98. Talk about the differences between working in Kansas City and then going to that market of Chicago.
Oh, it's just, you know, Chicago is the greatest sports market in America, maybe in the world. The passion, all those teams, that huge market, that great history, it's the best. And to work in a market like that, I mean, people say, well, what about New York and Boston and Los Angeles? They're nothing like Chicago. And I'm from the New York area, and I'm a New York person. But I would say this, Chicago is a much greater sports town. It just is, because of the passion of the fans. You have on the South Side White Sox fans, and the North Side Cubs fans. You have the pocket of Blackhawks fans. You have Bulls fans. But the Bears kind of bring everyone in that market together on a Sunday afternoon. All these different factions come together. And it just, it was a great experience. And what a year to start. I mean, I had no idea what I was getting into. The best season the Chiefs had when I was there, they went 9-7 and lost 6 of their last 8 games to get there.
Yeah.
That was their best year.
Wow. And then all of a sudden, Green Bay. Now, what is the transition then, Chicago to the Packers?
Well, the beauty of Chicago for me in my career was I was able to do a lot of different things, a lot of television, college football, ESPN, Big Ten, Notre Dame, basketball, and WGN-TV. And then they hired me to do the Bulls on the Superstation and fill in when Harry Carey was kind of failing toward the end, fill in on the Cubs games in the mid-90s. And it was just a great all-around experience to be in Chicago and to be doing all those things.
Yeah, wow, that is a ton.
It was a ton. It was great. But the Packers were the team I grew up back on the East Coast. I had two teams. I had the New York Yankees and the Green Bay Packers. Those were my teams, and they still are to this day. And I always said, you know, if I ever had a chance to do one of those teams in my broadcast career, broadcast one of their for one of those teams, I would have to take the job no matter what. And the Packers were the job that came up. And so no matter what, became this move to Green Bay.
And that was in 1998.
Yeah, well, that's when we were talking about it and everything else. And then, you know, when it kind of leaked out, I didn't realize the reaction I would get in Chicago. And so it was kind of interesting, but
a very kind reaction?
No. It was an interesting 99 and 2000 were interesting, because here I was, and I was still doing tons of work in Chicago with the Bulls and even the Cubs at that time, and obviously the Big Ten stuff. But I just moved my football affiliation to the Packers. So Chicago was TO'd. You know, PO'd that I would be moving from their beloved team. And Wisconsin was saying, what are we hiring the Bears guy for? So I was kind of in no man's land. I had to just kind of put blinders on and go forward, but it worked out.
Was there any tough transition at all, other than that kind of a thing that both sets of fans were like, what in the world's going on here?
Yeah, it was an interesting transition because the organizations were so different.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, the Bears are owned by the McCaskey family, and they were very good to me. So, you know, a lot of people have trouble with the family-owned business, but I think they've been great people, and they are so obviously into the NFL and the history of it. I mean, George Halas and you know, the whole bit. You know, but they always had trouble coming up with consistently good teams. I got there when they were at their zenith, mm-hmm. the 85 Bears, and for the next 4 years, the Bears were the best team in the league. They didn't win, but they were the best team in the league, and it was an interesting run. It was like being part of a rock group when we traveled. But the thing about the Bears was, okay, it's all family type thing. So you had relationships like that. You get to Green Bay, and it's more of a corporate thing. By that, I mean, there's no one single owner of this team. There's no Jerry Jones. There's no Michael McCaskey. There's none of that. It's kind of, you know, there's Bob Harlan,
yeah.
and he's running it and keeping, and you got the feeling he was more like taking care of the store. So it's a very different feel from an organizational standpoint. The football side was about the same.
Talk about the most memorable moments you have of calling Green Bay Packer games. Is there anything that sticks out, one or two things that you'll just always remember, always be at the forefront, or has there just been so many after all these years, it's hard to...
I think the first game Larry and I did, the first regular season game, the Raiders and Packers, John Gruden's Raiders are really good, and Brett Favre led the Packers on a touchdown drive. I think he hit Jeff Thomas into the south end zone with a touchdown pass to win it in the final seconds. It was a great, very emotional day. Favre was spent on the sidelines, emotional after the game and crying and the whole bit. It was just a really emotional opener at Lambeau Field. And I had my two kids with me. One of them, my youngest, was my spotter now. He was taking over that job. And my other oldest son was in his first year at Wisconsin. And so I wanted them to both be at this game, you know, yeah. the opening first game. And so we're coming down the elevator from the press box. And my son, Scott, says, "Well, Dad, this is what we came for, to see Brett Favre lead the Packers on a touchdown drive to win." And that was summed up kind of what it was all about. Yeah,
amazing. And to think through the time we went from Favre to Rodgers.
I mean,
just think about this time frame. Obviously, we're starting with Love this year, but first ballot Hall of Famers all these years with the same quarterbacks.
Well, you know, San Francisco had it, Jason, but they, you know, Steve Young's career in San Francisco was 7-8 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers' follow-up to Brett Favre was 18 years.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Especially, it's funny with the Bears when we play them all the time, and you see that statistics that would come up about how many quarterbacks they have gone through in the time we had Favre and Rodgers. It's wild.
It's incredible. And those two quarterbacks, and again, Reggie White had a big part of it.
Yeah.
Ron Wolf. Let's not deflate anyone else's contribution. There were more contributions, but those quarterbacks primarily rebuilt Lambeau Field and built Titletown.
Yeah. Dagger, where did that come from?
It's an old basketball expression. I used it on Bulls games. It's when the game is coming down to the end, there are a few seconds left, and somebody hits maybe a three-pointer that makes it a two-possession game, and the other team is not going to have enough time, not going to have enough possessions to catch up. That's the dagger. Well, it popped up. I was doing a Bulls game one Saturday night. The next day I was in Green Bay for a Packers game, and it was a back-and-forth game between, this is like around 2000, 2001, between the Packers and the Baltimore Ravens, and it was back and forth, but the Packers were up by two scores in its fourth quarter, and Brett Favre hits Bubba Franks with a touchdown pass in the south end zone, and I just blurted out, "And there's your dagger," because that put them up by three scores. Baltimore was not going to have enough time to catch up. They weren't going to have enough possessions to catch up, and that's your dagger. And it kind of grew from there. And when I didn't use it on a Packers win, people were saying, "Well, what was the dagger? What was that?" You know, that kind of thing. So it kind of took on a life of its own, unintentional on my part.
Was the first time you ever used the dagger then for the Packers?
For football.
Yeah, for football.
Yeah.
Have you ever called a dagger and then the game changed and went the other way?
Yeah, Seattle. But you know what?
Oh, the playoff game.
Not the playoff game. It was 2012, I want to say. The NFL officials were on strike. And the Packers are playing a Monday night game against Russell Wilson. And that pass into the end zone one official called touchdown, the other called incomplete or penalty,
interception or whatever.
And it should have been a penalty. And the whole thing went to replay back in New York. And best of my knowledge, New York understood the play should have been blown off incomplete or a penalty against Seattle for the receiver. He pushed off, blatant push off. The replacement officials missed the call, botched it completely. The league office in New York said, "Well, wow, if we change this call, we're going to have a riot in Seattle." So they let it stand.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that work stoppage was solved, and that was the end of it.
I have a framed picture at my house of whoever the defensive back was saying he caught the ball. I think they were both tied up, and then you see the two referees.
Yeah. It was like simultaneous possession.
Yeah, and I think one of the referees is signaling touchdown, and the other one is signaling something the opposite, and they're standing right next to each other. And there's a picture in the cornerback signed it, I think, "Heck yeah, I caught it," or something for the Green Bay Packers.
That's awesome.
As a huge fan, especially as a Packer fan growing up, How do you balance being a fan and then also a broadcaster?
Yeah, and you know what? You would think it's all positive, right? You'd be too positive. But we Packers fans, and I know this from having been one all my life, we're super critical of our team. You know, really are. And, you know, it's like every Monday, if they won the game, well, that was kind of an ugly win, wasn't it? What wins are ugly in this league? None. You know, but everybody's saying, well, they were lucky to get that win. That was an ugly win. No, any win is a good win in the NFL. It's a beautiful thing. But I think I have a tendency to be, through my eyes, sometimes you get a little too critical. And you have to, that's the thing I have to caution myself on, rather than being too positive. And, but that's the number one thing I have to think about is, okay, you think they should have blown this team out and they barely got a win. Well, you know, understand week to week in the NFL, understand how little difference there is. I mean, this isn't Wisconsin playing Buffalo or playing some directional Michigan team. This is the NFL and the best team in the league and the worst team in the league, the difference is not as big as you think. It's not as big as the record indicates between the worst team in the league and the best team in the league. So every week, it's a gauntlet every week in the NFL, in pro football. That's the way it is. Both sides get paid to win. The other guys get paid. I don't understand that, Jason, but the other guys make money too. and not everybody gets a drink box at the end of the day. That's the other thing I don't understand.
Let's talk about the Packers this year. Start of the Jordan Love era. I know you're up there and you're watching practices. You've been seeing the games. Give us your initial thoughts on what you think of the Packers this year.
This kid's come a long way in 3 years. He really has. He's a different kind of leader than Favre and Rodgers, who were both different from each other. And he's going to lead in a different way than Aaron did. I think he's just the command. He's always had the arm strength. Okay, he would not have been drafted if he couldn't make all the throws. That tough sideline throw from the left hash to the right sidelines, all those things. He would not have been drafted. He would not have been drafted if he didn't have good wheels, could make plays with his legs on the ground, keep plays alive. He's got all the physical attributes and always has. Now, what he's learned over the last 2 years under Aaron Rodgers is how to play the position. Now, he's had an opportunity to play regular season games, to play all those preseason games, to run the team in practice. We've seen all of that, and he's improved each year, okay? Made wonderful strides. Thought he looked really good in the preseason this year, both in practice where he's had some ups and downs there, as everybody does. But you have to understand, and all these writers write about practice like it's a game. It's not. It's practice. And when you're in training camp as a quarterback, and Rodgers used to do this all the time, you're going to make a throw to a guy who's well covered that you would never make during a game. Why are you throwing it there? Well, you want to see if that guy can make the contested catch, okay? And that's why you do so. Oh, he got picked off today, and he had two interceptions, and this, that, and the other thing. And we're talking practice, okay, not the game. And so they're experimenting in practice and even in some of the preseason games. But once you get to the regular season, it's a whole different story. That's what you have to evaluate a quarterback on. And the thing you don't know about the quarterback, all these guys are talented. They all have the skills. What you don't know is the it factor. And you won't know until that quarterback is in an NFL regular season game playing against a defense that is schemed to stop him. So don't tell me, oh, Philadelphia was great last year. They weren't geared up to stop Jordan Love. Kansas City 2 years ago, when Jordan had a start for Aaron, he had COVID. He didn't have, Matt LaFleur said he didn't have a good game plan for Jordan Love in that game. And by the way, despite the problems Love had in that game, I thought his fourth quarter was tremendous. He led the Packers on a touchdown drive, made a game of it.
Yep.
After really suffering an interception, after looking like a deer in headlights in the first, second, part of the third quarter, he settled in, and you could see he could direct a team through adversity on the road at a tough place to play and score a touchdown drive. Packers lost the game, but I thought there was progress there. I thought you saw something with him. Now you get a chance to see Jordan Love against defenses that have been scheming all week to stop him. Does he have the it factor that the great quarterbacks have? And that's something we don't know. You don't know about any quarterback. It's kind of like you hand the quarterback the keys. It's like a used car sale. you don't know if that car is going to work till they give you the keys and you drive it off the lot on your own.
Yeah.
And it's same thing with quarterbacks. You don't know till it's regular season and he's at the controls, he's got the keys, and he's on his own. Those are the things that we'll find out. I think Jordan's great kid. I think he's a wonderful teammate. The people love him.
Seem to.
They really do on that team. They will follow him. They will support him. Does he have the great it factor that only a few guys have, Jason?
Yeah.
You have to understand, there are 20 quarterbacks being paid as Hall of Fame first ballot franchise quarterbacks. There are only about five in the league. Five, maybe.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out what kind of quarterback Jordan Love is starting in Chicago this weekend.
As a lifelong Packer fan, I'm kind of ready for the change. I think I speak for a fair amount of fans, not
sure.
Everyone. If Aaron was the Aaron he was 5 years ago, I would love to still have him here. I just didn't feel his heart was in it. It just didn't seem the same. And at some point, you got to figure out, do you have anything in Jordan Love? And I think the time is now just to see what you have. Along those lines, I just asked one similar question. What do you think about a Jordan Love who's had these 2 years to stay by? He's a first-round draft pick.
Right.
Generally, nowadays, these first-round draft picks are thrown right into the fire. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the ability of him to sit 2 years behind an Aaron Rodgers, watch how Aaron did what he did, first-ballot Hall of Famer, the ability to be more successful when you can take that initial time and watch versus just getting thrown right in there?
I think it's huge. I think the league, I think I would like to say coaching, but it's not just coaching. It's personnel. It's ownership. This league ruins more potentially good quarterbacks than it makes. You understand that?
Yeah,
you understand
I do.
What I'm saying?
I do.
Okay? They put these kids in long before they're ready. Okay? And there are a couple who are going to start this year. A couple of rookies. One in Carolina. First pick in the draft. How many first, second, third picks in the draft have gone by the wayside? These are high. Jordan was like 24th, I want to say, something like that, 26th. These kids are getting picked in the top five, and they're not panning out. Why? Because the higher you pick a quarterback, the more pressure there is to play him now. And really, none of these kids are ready coming out of college. I don't care what program you're in. I don't care if they ran a pro-style offense. I don't care about any of that stuff. The jump from college to the NFL is absolutely huge, humongous. If I can put it into context in the passing game, and they used to joke about this, Rodgers and his receivers, you know, they would say, holy cow, Jordy was college open. You know what college open is?
Yeah.
There's nobody around you. In the NFL, that rarely happens. The difference in college for a quarterback is that he's throwing the football after the receiver has made his break and gotten to where the ball is supposed to be. In the NFL, the ball is thrown before the break is made.
Yeah. It's intercepted.
That's
if you do
huge.
It.
Huge.
Yeah.
And if the receiver doesn't get there, it's an egregious interception. And we're all saying, what was the quarterback thinking?
Yeah.
When actually his receiver got bumped off the route, the ball was delivered right on time to the exact spot where it was supposed to be thrown, and the receiver didn't get there.
Yeah.
That's the difference between college and pro, and that's a huge difference.
Yeah. I saw a stat that shows now that the Green Bay Packers are the youngest team in the NFL, which seems crazy. What do you think just about the roster in total, the defense? We've had all these high picks on defense over the years. Do you think the defense is going to have to carry the team this year to get them to be, you know, have what we would consider to be a successful season?
I don't think any one unit's going to carry a team in this league. I think it has to be a combination of things. Can the defense take the lead? Yes, I hope. I wish they would. I think they can. I think they have the talent to do that. We thought that last year, and it didn't happen for whatever reason, unfortunately. But maybe this is the year where they kind of mature. It looks to me like they've had a very good camp. They did come on in the last 6 weeks of the regular season last year and did seem to gain some momentum. They made some adjustments. They're much more aggressive than they used to be. More press coverage, more man coverage. Still, they're a zone team. They are. That's their concept. But you're going to see cornerbacks look at the on your TV screen. Look at the outside receiver. See how far the cornerbacks are off. If they're right up on them, you know it's man-to-man press. You're going to see more of that. The Packers have the cover corners to be aggressive like that, and I think they will be. It's something they did at the end of last year. I'm seeing more of that in camp. Saw more of that in the preseason. They have excellent pass. They have one of the deepest stables of pass rushers in the league. Their defensive line is a bit of a question mark with two young players in with Kenny Clark. But, you know, Devontae Wyatt looks like he's going to blossom big time, first-round draft choice at defensive end. And then T.J. Slayton appeared to be much more consistent in what I saw in practice and in games. He's the big nose tackle. The key for this defense, and Matt LaFleur said this to us in our first production meeting before the first preseason game this year. He, you know, we asked about the defense. He said, well, are they going to stick their nose in there against the run? Are they going to stop the run? And that's the biggest thing to note with this defense or any defense. I know this is a pass-first league and all this other stuff, but if you can't stop the run, even in today's NFL, then you're not a good defense. And the Packers have struggled in that area in recent years. If they stop the run, Jason, I guarantee they'll be a top-10 defense because they can cover the pass.
Well, I am so excited for Packer season. We're, you know, proud that we're a sponsor of the Green Bay Packer Radio. Thank you for doing our ads. You do such a great job. And just thank you for being the voice of the Packers on Sunday for me to listen to you, hear your voice, hear you call it. It's so exciting, and you've done such a great job. And all of us here in Wisconsin and everywhere that our Packer fans are lucky to have you. So, Wayne, thank you for that. Before I let you go, we have all of our guests play a little trivia game. We call it the Hupie Hot Seat. Today is football safety edition. My crack staff puts this together, and I have three questions we're going to have you all answer right. Just for fun. Question number one, NFL players have what percent chance of sustaining a concussion during their career? A, 8%, B, 28%, or C, 48%?
I'm going to be slightly optimistic and say 28%.
You're right, 28%. Crazy. It's that high. One of the things I want to ask you, that thing they put on the outside of their helmets now, I see on practice. What is that?
That shield? Yeah. They use that for the first few weeks of training camp and in the regular, just through the preseason in practice. It's for linemen, tight ends, both linemen, both offense and defense, maybe linebackers in some cases. Guys who are going to be playing close and collisions might occur. Helmet to helmet could happen. And it just prevents any kind of concussion from happening.
So it's another layer of support above the helmet.
Above the helmet, yeah. Okay. I think what they're going to try to figure out is how to get that below the helmet eventually. But I think the helmet technology has come a long way.
Yeah, from the leather helmets.
10 years, yeah. Actually.
Okay, question number two. What is the most common football-related injury? Is it an ankle sprain, wrist or hand injuries, or knee injuries?
Most common. I would say the ankle.
Okay. The answer actually is knee.
Knee.
And it says here that knee injuries account for 20% of all injuries suffered by NFL players.
Wow.
Who knows why? Lastly, true or false, the NFL has reduced the number of full contact practices during the regular season to minimize wear and tear on the players.
Yes, true. Yeah. Very true.
It seems like the players aren't practicing hardly at all with this new collective bargaining, doesn't it? I mean, you look back, it just seems wild how few contact practices these guys have.
It's amazing to me, and I've seen it now 46 years in the league. It's amazing to see where we've gone with the physical contact in practice and where it was at one time and where it is today.
Yeah.
But it's probably, as my partner Larry McCarron says, and he was back in the era that I speak of where, you know, two-a-day practices,
yeah,
physical hitting, even during the regular season there was hitting going on in practice, okay? And he says this is a lot smarter because think about it. I mean, how many bullets do you have in your holster, right?
Yeah.
If you're firing them all during the week, what are you going to have left for Sunday?
Yeah.
And it makes a big – I think that makes a lot of sense.
It does. And if you look at the old-timers, you and I both have been at events where Jerry Kramer is and that vintage, and those guys are barely moving around. And it's because of what you just said. You hope that the newer players aren't going to have those same kind of circumstances as they get older based
on
that.
And more care is being taken. The game has changed in the way you can hit and that kind of thing. You were mentioning the 85 Bears. You can't play the way they played.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore. So, I think it's a smarter game. It's a better game. But the principal reason why you can't hit in practice anymore, folks, and when you go to training camp, you see this thud hitting. You don't really see hitting. Is because these guys are bigger, faster, stronger than they've ever been. And if you were to go and hit the way they hit 40 years ago, you wouldn't have anybody left healthy on Sunday.
Interesting. Well, Wayne, thank you so much for taking some time to be on the podcast today.
My pleasure.
I'm so grateful to spend this time with you. I love listening to you do such a great job. Let's hope for an amazing season for the Packers this
year. I
think
it's going to be a surprising season in a good way.
I do, too. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Case result reading. Our clients were involved in a collision with another driver who attempted to make a left-hand turn in front of their vehicle on a state highway. As a result of the collision, one client sustained injuries to his neck, back, shoulder, and leg. His wife sustained injuries to her head, neck, and back, as well as a mental health injury. The injuries to our clients ultimately required surgical intervention. Attorney Eric Shady was able to resolve their respective claims with the applicable insurance carriers at mediation for $220,000. To view more cases like this, visit Hupy.com under the results section. Thank you for listening to this episode of Tell Them You Mean Business. If you want more information about the topics covered on this podcast, visit Hupy.com or email info@Hupy.com. We hope you have a great start to the fall season and stay safe this Halloween. We want to remind all listeners to take the time to talk to your family about safety this Halloween and reduce the number of child pedestrian accidents. As always, if you or a loved one are injured in an accident, be sure to call Hupy and Abraham at 800-800-5678 to tell them you mean business.